Are you sure we can tell this?
Massive fan of Off the Ball.
Ireland is in dreamland.
The All Ireland finals are almost upon us.
There's always good guests on.
Fastest ever seen you run in your life, though.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe at offtheball.com/join.
Highly recommend it.
OTB's The Hurling Pod.
With Bord Gáis Energy. Proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.
Welcome along. It is The Hurling Pod. We're live on a Monday evening as opposed to a Sunday after the excitement that we were treated to at Croke Park yesterday. 111 shots, 66 scores across the 90 plus minutes of play. One of the best ever All-Ireland finals, with Clare just about edging out Cork in the end by a single point. The teams were level on what was also a record 15 occasions across the epic, after which the Clare captain Tony Kelly described hurling as a religion in the Banner County and their manager Brian Lowen as their god. We'll discuss whether Cork can feel aggrieved about some of the big decisions across the game as well, as their wait to lift the Lee McCarthy Cup has now stretched into a 20th year even. I'm delighted to say they've got James Skell and Paul Murphy with me to break it all down. How you getting on, lads?
How's it going, lads?
How are you?
Skell, if I come to you first, what an epic, what a game. Is that right up there with the 2014 game between Kilkenny and Tipperary, in at least in our memory, as possibly the best All-Ireland final we've ever witnessed?
Yeah, good question. I've been thinking about this because I think the game itself offered an awful lot of opportunity to dissect certain elements, like the goals, the points, some of the points, the game itself, to say, what are the best ever, you know, in All-Ireland finals? That was the type of game it was. For me, being at, I suppose, I wasn't at the 2014 draw game, right? But being at that game yesterday, that was the best game in a final I ever witnessed, you know, as a neutral, obviously. I just think it absolutely everything, you know. And I can't, like, even as a neutral, the excitement it brought to me watching it was, like, I actually can't describe it. Like, it was electric. The crowd were excellent. There was some colour. The game was flowing like mad. It was going, it had everything. Unbelievable scores. Some of the best points. Tony Kelly's swivel point, I still can't get that out of my head. You know, how ridiculous that was. Saves. Opportunism, you know, there's loads of talking points. Like, we could be here potentially for 3 hours talking. There's so much that can be said. And great crack afterwards. So it was a good weekend.
I don't know how much about the good crack afterwards we can talk about, but Murph, I don't know, broad strokes, sum it up for us. It was breathless. I nearly needed a rest after normal time, but everybody after extra time. What a game.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And we sometimes talk about nearly being afraid to build these things up too much because it won't meet the excitement. This was a match that completely outdid all the excitement, all the hype. It was absolutely outstanding. It did have everything. Skell said it had everything. We saw two of possibly the greatest goals ever scored in an All-Ireland final. Definitely two of the greatest goals ever scored in an All-Ireland final. We had an electric start from Cork, and then we have Clare coming back in, grinding it out. We had big hits. We got what we wanted in terms of a free-flowing game. Lots of scores. You know, a really tense game. We had players dropping all over the field by the time 70 minutes was going. When we entered the extra time, you know, the benches were being unloaded. There was players coming back on. It was just frantic stuff. But in terms of an excitement and you know, as a spectacle, it was unparalleled. And again, Skell, you were saying with 2014, very hard to judge because I was playing. But this was the greatest probably match I've been to in terms of excitement. It was outstanding. And the atmosphere, I thought after Cork and Limerick in the semi-final, I was like, that atmosphere was unbelievable. I've never seen anything like that. This outdid that again. And it's remarkable that we got that in the space of 2 weeks.
Can I grasp the nettle of the question that we got the most probably on Twitter this afternoon, and that was asking about extra time before we break the game down itself? So I don't want to labour this, but I want to get both of your views on it and how you feel as ex-players. So Skell, if I can come to you first. This change came in, I think it was 3 years ago, 2021, after that championship, that you wouldn't go directly to a replay after 70 minutes in an All-Ireland final, that extra time will be played first, and then if it's level after 90, you go to another day. How do you feel about that? Do you think it should go directly to a replay after 70, or how would you feel as an ex-player about it?
I'm kind of torn, Will, to be honest, because if I was to take it from let's say a fan's perspective, a neutral perspective, I think a replay would have been probably the fairest, best option. I think that yesterday there were tired bodies all over the place, probably facilitated, you know, to some errors that happened, either mental or physical as well. But from a player's perspective, if I was one of the players, like, you want to keep going. Do you know what I mean? Look, it's easy for me to say, I'm in the goals. But you want to keep going. Poor old Murphy, 90 minutes run after, lads. But it's really tough. Like, the first half of extra time, I was right across from the Clare half back line, and I was looking at John Connell and Jim Ryan, and they were constantly stretching their calves and their hamstrings. And I was just saying, them poor lads must be absolutely bit, because the pace of the game is different now than what it was. Now, I understand the preparation of the game is also different. It's gone to different levels. But the pace of the game nowadays is so fast that to do 75 minutes or 77 minutes is tough. But then to go and try to do it, I'd say a cumulative 95 minutes played over the game, that's extremely tough. So I think a replay would have been really, really fair and do it again. And look at here, of course we want to replay. We want to go ahead again. But I'd say that needs to be looked at, particularly for a final win. I think there probably will be a rule change there whereby they just abandon next time and bring in a replay.
Murph, what do you reckon?
I've looked at this from both sides. I've played in two drawn All-Ireland finals, and both days I would have said, geez, if they had an opportunity to throw the ball and do extra time, I would have taken it. Because for a player coming down after that game, you know, emotionally, physically, mentally, everything, and building yourself back up 3 weeks' time, like that's a marathon in itself. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's a great privilege to be able to do that, but it's a tough thing in itself. And as a player, when you're standing on the field and the blood is up, you're kind of going, right, let's go in here, get a drink of water and come back out and keep going. Let's just get an answer here, if there's to be an answer. As a supporter, yesterday I was praying for a draw. I was like, just get a draw here now. Come back. Let's come back here now in 2 weeks' time or whenever it's on. And I just really wanted to do it all over again. So this is a very tough call to make. I saw Pat Ryan saying that after 70 minutes. And like, again, he's a great man to ask as well with this. Because I think with management would love for a draw to happen, go straight to a replay, because it allows them to maybe reset. And they've seen a lot during the game by 70 minutes to maybe go, right, you know, if we had our day again and we were to go to replay, this is something that we do different. But as a player, you're living in the moment. You kind of just want to, for me anyway, you kind of just want to go again. But I guarantee you, if you speak to, I'd say this is split 50-50 and will consistently be split 50-50. If you spoke to the Cork and Clare players after yesterday and you said, you know, results aside, would you rather go to replay? Let's say if you asked them before the match, I'd say 50% of them would have said, yeah, replay. Another 50% say, no, look, we're here now, let's go. So it's a very tough... It's a very tough one. And the other side is, you know, people say we go to a replay. That extra time was sensational in terms of entertainment as well. You know, it was absolutely sensational. Very tough on players. But as a spectacle, like as a day yesterday, it was incredible. The whole day was absolutely incredible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'd agree. And look, the thing of it is, I thought Dalo made a very fair point in his article in The Examiner overnight as well, where he said, as a Clare supporter, he would have hated a replay because Shane O'Donnell's hamstring's already gone. He says it was gone since last Thursday, so he's off the field. Cleary's off with a shoulder injury. There's two or three lads, key players down the middle of their team that might have missed it. And they took their opportunity and won an extra time. Now, maybe you feel differently if the result doesn't work out, but the reality is that from their point of view, it was probably a good thing that it went on for Clare. And maybe, and this is something we could dig into as well, Skell, the fact that Clare have built their panel over the year and that so many players were tried out during the league. We were talking about the, you know, I think it was 36 players they'd used before the league final, and then Shane O'Donnell comes back in at that point as well. Ultimately, having those players to come in is quite helpful when you have to hurl for nearly 100 minutes.
Oh, but sure, it's huge. I think there was something like 17 substitutes used overall between both teams. Clare had 9. And look, they brought in players like Mounsey, and not for a short period. I mean, Darrell Owen, like, when you consider Conor Cleary went off with a short, looks like a shoulder injury again, Darrell Owen did really well. Like, did really, really well. He started in there. And that was probably one of the points we noted prior to this game, that strength of panel is huge nowadays, that you need a solid 20 at least, you know. And you need your substitutes to come in and finish the game like you start, with the same kind of energy and intent. And I think everyone who played for, and in fairness, like, as well, I have to compliment Cork, because, like, is it Tommy O'Connell? Come on, he was top drawer. Do you know what I mean? Like, for the lads who came in, let's say, you know, facilitated the match hugely, and they didn't let the tempo drop, the level, the standard didn't go down at all. Like, look at what Galvin did. Like, you know, look what Meehan did. Darrell Owen, what he did. Do you know what I mean? There were huge contributions across the board from Clare substitutes. So I think that huge credit has to go to Brian Owen and his team for building this team, building the panel, building over time. And they did, look, they have taken an awful lot of flack as well. And some of it has been, I suppose, warranted. I suppose after the first Kenny Smith final, they deserved it. The second one, semi-deserved it too, but just they really put the shoulder of the wheel this year, league and championship, you know, winners. Like, that's a hard thing to do. Doubles nowadays are very, very hard to do. And we see, obviously, we've grown accustomed to Limerick doing it, but like for Clare to do it in the manner in which they did, you know, struggling to get up to Limerick's pitch in the Munster final, then to roar into the Kilkenny game towards the finish, and then, you know, extra time epic. Like, so they're fully deserving champions, if you ask me.
Yeah, we're hoping, by the way, to go across Ennis to the celebrations a little bit longer. So the team literally just getting up on stage at the moment in Ennis. So hopefully we can link in with the player or two before we finish up the live stream as well. For you, Murph, let's take the way the game flowed then, because Cork came out like an absolute train. First 7-8 attacks, no wides. They put 1-8 up on the board very, very quickly. I think it's 12 minutes gone when they've got 1-8 after that remarkable goal from Downey. Not a single wide during that period. Have built themselves a nice lead in the game. And then Clare, it was like they took it by the scruff of the neck after that. And they had a really good period with Shane O'Donnell, whether his hamstring was gone or not at that point. He really dragged them back into it at that stage.
Yeah, the start by Cork was absolutely immense. I actually was kind of worried for Clare, really, after about 10 minutes. I was thinking this is going to be very one-sided if Clare don't come back into it. And it wasn't just a case that breaks were going the way of Cork. They were really forcing their game onto Clare. And something that was very apparent was they were pulling and dragging the Clare half back line. And they were targeting John Conlon. It seemed very apparent that they were trying to create space and run Shane Barrett and John Conlon into that space in the hope of creating it. And they were creating it. And, you know, you even look on then, you've Cleary gets a yellow card, Adam Hogan gets a yellow card in and around the same time. And you're kind of looking that, okay, they're being kind of ran fairly hard here. You have two of the full back line now on yellow cards. This is a really dangerous situation. But for the two boys who got yellow cards, they actually grew into the game after that. Counter to what you think a player on a yellow card would be doing, they actually really grew into it. They were excellent. Yeah. And then the rest of the field then, like, is in the half back line started to break even with the Cork half forward line in terms of winning possession. Like, there was a great ball there that Shane Barrett and John Conlon ran for, and Conlon got a flick and he went back the next time, he just got another flick, and the cavalry came in then to get the ball, you know, and help Conlon, and Clare moved it up the field. And Clare just started winning those little battles. And for a while, Cork just drifted out of it. And before you knew it, for all the hurling Cork had done, Clare had just slowly ebbed their way back in, took their scores, got back into the game. And that kind of swing of momentum on a field can be, you know, for the team that were behind, it can create huge confidence. That when you turn that around, it can be huge confidence. And I felt that Clare really, really got that. And for me, after that, you know, despite the way it ebbed and flowed, Clare were really the ones that were setting the pace after that. Like, I mean, outside the first 10, 15 minutes of when Cork were absolutely immense, I always felt that it was Clare that were really, I suppose, dictating the game, and really grinding it out. And there was times there as well during the second half where Cork were only 2 points down, but you nearly felt that the energy was, if, you know, they were kind of feeling that were a lot, it felt like they were further behind than what they were. You know, there was just kind of a strange energy. So for a lot of the game, once, you know, once we left Crow Park yesterday, I remember looking back at it and just went, you know, at really big times during the game, it just felt like Clare just kept having that edge during the real hard moments. And when it needed big scores, they were getting those scores as well. But, like, I really think, to be honest, if this did go to a replay, I actually think it probably would have suited Cork that bit more, to be honest, because I just think the Cork had that bit more on the bench, and they maybe had a small bit more fresher legs if it went to it. But Clare were absolutely immense. Over the 90 minutes, they were absolutely immense. Very fine margins in it. Calls here or there, and the greater scheme of things, it could have ebbed it either way. But I just found that those big scores that we go back to, you know, and Tony Kelly grew into game, unbelievable. Mark Rogers' goal, absolutely unreal. Anytime Clare seemed to kind of need a big score or a big play, they had someone stepped up. Shane Newton's point, you know, an extra time. There were just so many of them moments that I felt it's just coming Clare's direction. But, like, as Scale said at the top of the podcast, you could sit here for 3 hours and dissect this 90-minute game. You could dissect it for 3 hours easily, and you wouldn't feel the time going. It was immense.
Scale, last week you said this might well be the game this year, when everyone talked about how quiet Tony Kelly was for 47 minutes in the semi-final, where it might just explode from. Not just where the score is wonderful, and we can talk particularly, I'd say, about his goal and that point in the 88th minute where he flicks the ball into space and then flicks it over his shoulder and between the posts. Like, when fatigue had to be crazy at that point, he produces this piece of magic. But on top of that, his scores were so important during the game. So he gets 1-4, and the five scores he got during the game, at each point they went over, he'd put Clare ahead. So if you ever needed a captain to be Captain Fantastic, we got to see that from Tony Kelly on Sunday.
We did, I suppose, from a system perspective. The reason I said Tony Kelly could explore this type of game is because Cork played like an orthodox, like in terms of system setup, in terms of 15 on 15. So like he could have the essentially the freedom of the park to go where he wanted. And he sat back a bit, let's say, when they conceded the goal and just showed up clear. It just seemed like I couldn't see obviously from where I was, but it didn't look like the instruction came in from the sideline. It looked like he just did it himself. You know, like between himself and Conlon, they just showed it up for the few minutes after Cork went up, let's say. Was it 7 or 8 points at that stage? Well, I don't think they scored from probably
7 up, yeah.
7 up, was it? I don't think they scored from probably 20 minutes from play.
Yeah.
The point, you know, give or take around that, because I think that it was around 15, 16 minutes and they didn't score again until, let's say, the hidden tradition time of the first half. So it really worked. That's from a defensive perspective. But then he just seemed to be everywhere. Like, the easy thing to do from an analyst perspective is look at the scores, right? But look at the amount of flicks and tackles and off runs he made. You know what I mean? He was everywhere. He was epic. And if ever there was a man of the match performance to be given, you know, by a man who was obviously injured for all the league, kind of a stop-start championship, was questioned in the say Gary's performances in the Munster final and also in the Ireland semi-final to a degree, and then he just answered it all. But he is quality. He gave one of the greatest performances, to say, from a man of the from a player in the Ireland final that I've seen in recent memory. But he and like. It's hard for me to speak about this because I just can't get over that swivel point. You know, the goal is unreal. Don't get me wrong. That's class. The way he got upright, that's the point where over his shoulder, like that was just ridiculous. And it was, I was right in line with, like, so it was such a view. But like, that's the kind of entertainment these guys are offering you. You know, what we're seeing here is unprecedented, I think, from hurlers in this day and age. I'm not trying to be a hurling snob and be overexcited, but this is genuine. Like, what we've been seeing probably for the last, you know, 5 or 6 years is the game has just gone to a level that I didn't think I'd ever get to be honest. And like, it's scary to see where it's going to go in the next 5 or 6 years, because the teams are just prepping all the same now, as much and as hard as possible. You're looking at machines out there on that pitch. You probably touch on Lucas Kirstenstein with regards to the S&C for Clare, the condition that both teams are in, but epic. Like, Tony Kelly, what a man.
Alright, before I ask Murph about Tony Kelly, talk about Lucas then, because this is such a unique achievement for someone to be strength and conditioning coach, Tipperary, Galway, now with Clare. Clearly this guy, over the last, 7, 8 years, he's got a magic touch. What does he do? Because I know a few people had sent us questions saying, ask Gael, you know, what does he do to get teams so well prepared? So give us an insight into him there.
Well, I don't mean to be... Well, I'm about to say it. I don't want it to be offensive, but Lucas is Polish, okay? He doesn't have the same kind of... Irish kind of way about him, right? In the sense that he is completely straight, nearly emotionless. You know what I mean? He's all about business. He's a sound man, pure gentleman. I have huge time for that man. He's a friend, right? But first and foremost, it's business. So he'll tell you exactly where you're at. You know what I mean? I love that he lines up. A few of us would say when he first came in, he just said, that. You know what I mean? Like, well, he was the first man who brought in most, right? For a large period, the S&C was kind of doing your own time. You were given the programs, you did it yourself. We brought in collective S&C and just made an actual training session and brought the level up. He's very, very methodical. He's very scientific minded, very analytical. He's extremely intelligent in what he does. So he garners respect because of the way he operates himself, carries himself. And he'd have a group in his hands too. And another thing as well is he wouldn't be afraid to challenge the likes of Rowan or Michal or Liam Sheedy at the time, whoever it was. He wouldn't be afraid to challenge them and say, listen, you've done too much now, this is the session, finish. You know what I mean? And when he speaks, you listen. I'll put it that way to you. So he's just great. He's a great mix, Will, if you ask me, in terms of professionalism, his manner, his intelligence, everything about that. And like, he was certainly lost to Galway, don't get me wrong, but huge coup for him, and look at the way they finish.
Why did he leave Galway?
He lives in Limerick. I think what happened was he was with Galway for how long? He came in, I think when he came in 2016, I'm going to say. Was 2016 he came in 2017, excuse me, and then he was sort of 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. So he did 7 years with Galway. I'd say probably just went to a stage whereby he nearly stagnated to a degree. You know what I mean? So for himself and let's say for the group, so I think he the natural thing was to move on, which you might say is that's ridiculous, but it just. That's probably the way the way it left. I think he wanted a bit of a change as well, a bit of different scenery, and it probably suited as well to move on.
Okay. Murph, I can ask you about Tony Kelly, because obviously we let Scale have free rein to talk about him there. First of all, talk to us about the goal. I know some people today have been saying potentially we're too many steps after he initially takes the ball from Fitzgerald, but when he's to get that ball back onto his hurley and basically improvise entirely for the last few touches before the finish, because there's players closing on both sides, the run is starting to slalom a bit, and Patrick Collins is coming out to narrow the angle. Tony Kelly, just a moment of genius to actually get a shot away.
Yeah, it all comes down to just pure instinct for me, and Tony Kelly reading what's happening in front of him in fractions of a second. Because if you look at it there, you could probably break that down into he made probably three decisions that in the space of about 2 or 3 seconds, there were three big decisions. So first of all, when he gets the ball off David Fitzgerald, he runs through, he knows to go out and around to get away from the traffic of running into the bodies of the Cork players. And as soon as he has a little look, he's carrying towards goal to possibly go for a point, but maybe just seeing what plays out in front of him. And now this is all in the space of about half a second. When he sees O'Donoghue coming at him, he knows that O'Donoghue's momentum is going to take him past him, feigns to go for a point, takes it back onto her, knowing O'Donoghue's going to pass him. And at this stage, then it's her decision of, I now know there's players coming back onto me where I can't strike the ball. I'm going to have to dink it. I'm going to have to do something close to the body that they can't get to me. But those three decisions happened in the space of about 3 seconds, I'd say. And it's all pure instinct. You can't. And the biggest challenge for Tony Kelly there is changing his body direction each time. Like, he's moving at full tilt and he's able to move and change direction and bring the ball with him. And if he makes one mistake there in terms of a misstep, the defenders are in on top of him. So just it was just flawless. And it reminded me of like Austin Gleeson's goal in the semi-final in 2017, where it's kind of a case where a player's just in that flow mode. You just know they're in the mood and they run and say, okay, well, ye come and meet me and I'll make a decision then. Like, you know, I might go for a point, but believing in yourself that you have the skill to do it. But it's just the audacity of a, and I mean that in a very respectful way, the audacity in an All-Ireland final to do that. You know, Tony Kelly has probably done something like that, and Shane O'Donnell and Patrick Horgan have done stuff like that in training several times. But in an All-Ireland final, to have the presence of mind to do that at a huge part of the game, there's just so many parts to pull apart there that it's just, the more you think of it, the better the goal is. It's just an outstanding goal. And you know what, for a special moment that you know when you're watching it, you're like, that was like that. This is a moment we're going to look back on 10, 15, 20 years' time. There's a goal that's after happening that we know we will look back on in years to come as an incredible score. So it's rare that you have those moments where you're like, yeah, that's absolutely outstanding.
Well, you can both take this question coming in from Richard Hogan. Is TK's goal better than Richie's in the COVID Leinster final? Or if you can have a moment to think about your club mate's goal here, but Scale, would you rate it above the Richie goal?
I would. No, that's no slight on Richie. What Richie did was fantastic as well, to pity about the opposition. But I just think what Tony did, like, it was a decision. For me, when I'm watching the run at its very beginning, right, it's a decision by Tony Kelly. It reminded me actually a bit about the goal that Canning scored more from the 12.
Yeah.
First All-Ireland, I think it was. It was, yeah. Same goals, but like that. Just as soon as he gets the ball, I'm going for the black spot here. That's where I'm heading now. And like, regardless of the red shirts that was in front of him, Tony Kelly had it on his mind. And you're right, there was one thing carrying out or executing a skill in real time, right? But to carry out, let's say, he had the wherewithal and the foresight to do exactly what you said, what you explained, Murph, right? That, whilst under pressure, whilst running full tilt, that execution of difficulty is, oh my God, it's unreal. Like, that's ridiculous entirely. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's, again, I talked about it, man. It's levels, Will. Like, the level that man has got to in his performance yesterday, I don't know, we've seen it for a while yet. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, I thought Hegarty's goal, do you remember the Hegarty, the one he scored against Kilkenny as well, where he flicked it up with the heel of the hurl, yeah, and put it past Murphy. I thought that was excellent, right? Because it was a skill-based. But what Kelly did yesterday was just a mix of decision, timing, execution, and just pure intent, which is the big thing for me. I'm going for this.
Okay. Shane Power is asked here. Hold on, I'll put it up on screen first. Can you ask Gail about Patrick Collins' puck-out choices? Must have been strict instructions to keep going long all game, but surely he should have changed strategy himself in a game when it wasn't working. So we said last week that against Limerick it was a case of if it's going long and it's working, you just keep going. This time round, I think there's probably two factors, but you can definitely answer the bit after that. First of all, I think the referee was a bit more picky on how quickly he could puck it out. So yeah. I'm guessing those few seconds probably make a big difference. But aside from that, why didn't they vary it after it wasn't working?
So I think as well, just a few numbers here, if you will, right? So by my count, right, Cork won 40% of their puckouts, which in today's game is, like, is a very, very bad statistic. You need to be at least getting about 60 or 65% of your puckouts to have, I suppose, an impression on the game. Clare did that. What happens is, like, remember we spoke about before about Limerick were really one of the first ones to get going fast within the 7 second range. There's a stat there that if you get the puck out within 7 seconds, like, you have a 2/3 higher chance of scoring, and that's what Limerick started, and most teams follow that, because the simple reason is because the opposition hasn't got time to reset. When Patrick Collins wasn't allowed to do that, or Ivor Quilligan, mind you, it slowed things down, and then Cork had to go into their kind of their standard formation, if you like. For me, I thought the puck out option had to be changed after literally the 15, 17 minutes, around that 20 minutes mark in the first half, because what was happening was it was allowing the Clare backs, Clare defence, to be in the game. Do you know what I mean? Because obviously Clare looked at this and it was executed very well against Limerick, but if it's not working, change it temporarily. I'm not saying abandon it. Do you know what I mean? Just change it temporarily. Mix it up with a couple of ones into space, because as far as I could see, Cork were operating in a kind of a straight line. Let's call it narrow, right? So there was loads of opportunity for the forwards to make runs, but in fairness, they didn't make enough of them. That's the side. And you can't look at Patrick Collins and go, well, it was his choice. Yes, it was his choice, but he can only do what he's been offered out the pitch also. So if I'm looking out the pitch and I'm seeing a static set of forwards, I'm like, fuck, I have to lamp this, you know what I mean? Whereas if I see forwards moving and they're heading to a spot, grand, fine grass, put in over somebody, and at least then you're being afforded an opportunity by your teammate, right? That's why I'm saying about Limerick, and I know I keep going on about them, but their movement all the time, even Clare yesterday, some of the movement, particularly in the second half, was fabulous. Just little lateral stuff. And yes, you have a great mix where Fitzgerald and Lugan stand there, right? But then you have full forward line coming out around, you had lateral movement across, and it was just providing more options to Quilligan. I just don't think Cork didn't do it. And you could feel it in the crowd as well. Probably you were around it as well, Murph, where people were saying, like, they need to change here. This has to stop. It's not working, because it was allowing the Clare midfield and the Clare backs to get on top, to keep confidence high and to play the game at their terms. Because if you want the ball down top of them as a defender, don't you, Murph? You want a 50-50, because it limits the forwards' opportunity, if you ask me. You don't want it to be running after space with 60 yards in front of you. Do you know what I mean? So it's probably was an error overall. It's food for thought, don't get me wrong, but it certainly wasn't the losing of the game. Yes, it was a contributing factor, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't the losing of it. So I answered the question along the way. Yes, he should have changed it up on a temporary basis, but again, he's only doing what he's offered.
Yeah, the Cork goal is a fabulous goal as well. What a run, what a catch, and then what a run from Downey, and what a finish when he eventually got there and the space kind of opened up in the middle. But Jim Byrne has asked me to ask you, Murph, how would Cody have reacted to Clare's defence for the Cork goal? He was allowed to waltz through about 70 yards there.
Yeah, like when I look back on that, if I'm looking at it from a point of view of we're analysing it, let's say this was a match we played in a round robin phase and we're analysing it 2 nights later in training, I can picture Brian or the management going, the first lad, why did you pass him by? Like they quite clearly were going with their men, the Cork defenders, or the Clare defenders. And I'd say two players definitely could have went
Jim
towards Dermot Ryan.
Dermot Ryan stood with his man, and then Adam Hogan was second guessing.
Yeah,
Adam Hogan should have pushed over, and Jim. Well, first of all, Ryan should have got him.
Yeah, Ryan had an opportunity because his man actually brought him towards the trouble, so Clever. He could have went and just stood in front of him and just change his direction. That's all you're looking to do. You're not looking to actually even connect with him. But at that stage then, Adam Hogan, yeah, leave your man, because Adam Hogan's damned if you do, damned if you don't. But the one thing you do know is that if you don't go to Rob Downey, he's getting a shot. But if you do go to him, you're now entering a stage where 70% chance he's going to get a hand pass off to your man, but you've now restricted, you've now brought down the odds of a goal being scored. So just go to him and hope then that someone closes down. I can't remember who's even off the shoulder, but let's say Adam Hogan's man, whether it was Brian Hayes or Alan Connolly or whoever it was, that man then gets closed down by whoever, Patrick Collins comes off the goal, another defender cuts it off, but at least start bringing down the odds of a goal being scored. But the fact that Rob Downey ran from, and it's not to take away from the goal, it's outstanding. Rob Downey can only play what's in front of him. But the fact that he ran from his own midfield out near the sideline straight in and had a clear run and a clear strike, straight away as a defender, you're going, someone, one person should have met him there at least. And whatever stage that's at, the 45, the 21, the 14, someone should have met him. And that's yeah. something. But look, you know, Clare, it's funny, when you win these things, no one's going to think about that afterwards. But if you lost the game, you would have went, you could point to that and go, look, there was something wrong here, our attitude wasn't right, you know. But hindsight's a great thing, but definitely, you know, in any defending situation, a man's running on goal, somebody has to go and meet him.
Yeah. We'll get into a question about Adam Hogan in a moment. So I just want to play a little bit of Adam Hogan here, who's been talking to Tommy Rooney. Clare were working their way to Ennis a little bit earlier. They stopped off in, I think it was Shannon, when he got to talk to Adam Hogan. And here's what he had to say about what's required from a defender on the big day.
I had a great view with Tommy Walsh from the seventh floor throughout the game. It's unbelievable. But sitting beside Tommy Walsh, somebody who's done it and won so much, he does this amazing monologue before the game as the players are walking behind our team band. He describes you as the snarliest cornerback he's ever come across. You play with an edge, Adam. Like, that doesn't come from nowhere. It's important to have that when you're competing in a cauldron like yesterday.
Yeah. I remember I was younger and one of my coaches told me, you always you say, nice lads win nothing. And I always took that with me, I suppose, that you have to have that edge when you're playing, especially in the backs, especially cornerback. It's just so, like, the forwards are so good. You have to have that edge. Like, any forward, if you see Alan Connolly, he's such a good forward. If you give him any step, like yesterday, like, he's such a good player, like, if you give him any step, he score a goal. He saw it, like, in the last few rounds. So I knew my second hat at the edge and being on my top of form to keep him quiet.
Yeah, you did unbelievably. The defences did unreal on both sides. Like, all the talk was about the forwards and all the talent on show, but it was just incredible stuff. I'm sure you'll get a chance to watch the game back, and we might catch up down the line.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch.
Enjoy this evening, Adam. Well done.
Thanks, Tommy.
So there you go, Adam Hogan speaking to Tommy Rooney about half an hour ago. Which brings you around to Tin Tuna for you, Murph. And regarding Adam Hogan, what's the difference between great cornerbacks and normal human beings?
I don't know what's being inferred there by normal human beings. But yeah, like for Adam Hogan, it's really interesting hearing it there, because I know a lot of people will look at Adam Hogan and say that he plays on the edge. And a lot of people would have said, like, Tommy would have played on the edge and different players. The thing is about being... I can't comment as being a forward, but for being a back, there's definitely a lot of emotion involved with being a back, because, you know, 90% of the ball you're trying to win is a ball that wasn't made for you. It was a ball that's made for the lad you're marking, and you have to try and outfight that player. And it's interesting what Adam Hogan is saying there, that he took something from a coach younger when he was younger that said, you know, a nice guy's win nothing. And he obviously identified with that, well, this is how I can play better. If I'm maybe a little bit angry or I'm a little bit aggressive, that's where I hurl well. And like something I give for a comparison, one of my clubmates said to me a while ago, last year we were just kind of comparing notes. And like, I'd be a very positive player in terms of my mindset going into a game, saying, yeah, things are going to work out here. You know, you've done a lot of training, whatever. But he was saying to me that, no, I don't like getting positivity. I like getting criticised, because that keeps me on my edge. That keeps me where I want to play. And I think as a player and as a cornerback, or probably for any position, if you understand what makes you tick, that'll make you perform better. And I think Adam Hogan has a really good understanding. He knows, I think, that if he gets in a lad's face and he gets a reaction off him and he comes out with a ball, that gets him to the pitch of the game. And because consistently, that's where we see Adam Hogan. It's like, you know, he's tigerish. He's, you know, he's kind of flicking at lads. He's like a terrier. And I mean that again, respectfully. But that's where he performs best. I think if he went out in the field kind of plumassing lads and being all nice to them, it probably would affect his game, you know? And I think he understands that as well. But what's the difference that makes a good cornerback? I'd probably just say that. I've met cornerbacks that are, you know, really, you know, they don't say a word, like as in terms of the corner forwards that I would have played with, said, this fella wouldn't say a word to you. He just goes out and hurls away, and he hurls really well. You meet other fellas then that they're mouthing as soon as you go onto the pitch. It just depends on what works for you. That's really it. But I think the cornerbacks, and particularly likes of Adam Hogan and Conor Lean and Conor Cleary, you look at these boys yesterday. One of the things you definitely need is that the belief that even if you pick up a yellow card, that you still have to go and hurl your game. You have to kind of be able to have the bit of nerve that, okay, I could get booked here after 5 minutes. I could get booked here after 30 minutes. I still have to hurl my game. And in doing that, I have to be fighting for balls that are 70-30 balls, that 30% chance I'm going to win, 70% chance I'm not going to win. I have to stay involved for the 70 minutes. I have to fight for balls that, you know, even if you think there's only a 20% chance of you getting to, in that you're running back, you're chasing back, you're constantly looking to be involved. It's just constantly that. And flipping to the other side, you know, Owen Downey was outstanding yesterday. And he kind of typified that kind of... he typified that attitude as well. He was always in the right place at the right time. He mopped up a lot of ball. And one ball that I just think was... it goes probably unnoticed, but I thought it was a real reflection of his frame of mind was the ball that came off the post. And I think Euskahill would recognise that. So often, forwards and backs are caught napping when a ball comes off the post. Downey had, I think it was Peter Duggan on his back. Ball comes in. People thought it was going wide, going over the bar. Hits the post. Downey is there. One touch into the hand. And Peter Duggan was on his back. And he got out. I think he got a free or he passed the ball off. But it's just there's so many traits there of just being ready for every situation. You have one chance in a full back line. You have one chance to control a ball. You have to be aggressive. You have to be tenacious. And look, bringing it back to Adam Hogan, he typifies all that. He's had an exceptional year. He deserves all his plaudits. You could probably pull apart the characteristics of a cornerback all day, but whatever works for you, works for you.
Okay. Here's two, Skell, I fully expected were coming your way, and I'm going to roll them into one. So get ready. Here you go. Quick one for Skell from Johnny McGrath. Just curious, has his opinion on Conlon changed after today? And then Jesse James. Does Skell take back his comments about the Clare backs now? Immense yesterday, in particular Conlon, who was dominating that line. So Conlon had a really good day on Barrett, who we were talking about as a hurler of the year potential, played brilliantly on Declan Hannan against Limerick. So go on, the floor is yours.
I think from a Clare perspective, their backs unit was, you know, was excellent yesterday. I think they'll probably finish with, I'll hazard a guess and say, a minimum three All-Stars, potentially four. And I'd say, you know, if you're asking your defence to produce performance, like I can imagine being in the dressing room with Brian Lohan and he's talking to his defence, being a defence man himself, like, and he's just telling them to be miserly tight, you know, et cetera, and be aggressive, et cetera. They epitomised the way that their manager used to play, if you like. I thought they were excellent. John Connor was excellent. Like, I have no problem saying that if I'm making this, you know, if I think something may happen, right, and it doesn't happen, it's wrong, no problem, put the hand up and say, wrong. Okay, it's grand. So we got it wrong. I said Cork win the game. Wrong. So I had worries, I had concerns for Clare, let's say, from a ball playing perspective and going down to the middle, let's say, but they 100% yesterday. The good thing for me was, and I was watching it in real time, was they didn't allow it to continue. You know, so for me, if I'm looking at defence that are getting skinned, let's say, for a period of a game, be 10 minutes or whatever, right, or 15 minutes, they don't allow it to continue. So they stopped it. So they fixed it. You know, so the likes of, and the thing is, everyone will look at Tony Kelly, John Connan, mighty, but you have to understand as well what Cathal Malone did yesterday. You didn't see Darragh Fitzgibbon really for, probably 60, 65 minutes more. Would you say that? No, we didn't see him get to the heights that he got previously throughout the championship. So I think as a unit, let's say even from 1 to 9, et cetera, that unit were fabulous yesterday. And if you want them to perform on the big day and let's just say shut up a few doubters, that's exactly what they did yesterday. And Hogan looks like it. I couldn't understand it for the life of me how, you know, a man, and I can say this respectfully for Conlon, how a man of his age was able to keep going for 90, 95 minutes. You know what I mean? How was he able to stay going? Because even like, when you consider the pace of where he's playing, because he's involved in everything. You know, Hogan, for example, Murph Wright, he'll have spurts. You know, he'll be in and out at cornerback. Yeah. Conlon's involved in feck and everything. He's up, down, left, right, etc. So for him to keep going to the pace he was able to keep going was immense. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And lovely picture then at the end where himself and Tony Kelly were I think they were lying on the ground. Hogan would say, Kelly Winton actually sought him out. And I was just thinking, you know, them boys were probably drove this thing. You know, they probably were at a bit of a low edge after the Munster final, but they drove it. Do you know what I mean? I can just picture them as driving. Do you know what I mean? So again, huge credit to them.
Yeah, this is a good start as well from Liam Slattery. Scores and plays from the starting midfielders and forwards. Clare got 3.18 from play. Clare didn't have a free in the second half, which is crazy. Before we talk about the referees in a moment, Cork 16 points. So Horgan's free is crucial. Yeah, it was incredibly low. I rewatched it this morning. I think they had no free within scoring range anyway. I think it was only just a couple of clearance frees that they had in the second half.
When I was checking the McCarthy scores from frees, I was like, that can't be right. You only have four, so that can't be right. But
Yeah, absolutely insane. Everyone wants to talk about the crucial decisions within the game. So let's go for it, lads. Right. So let's go one by one. I've got these written down here. Let's see which ones we're going to have a look at and see what you think.
Give me the easy one now, will you?
Go on. You take the easy one. Let's go to the one that mattered the most, which was Conor Lean, who I'm going to say, and I said this on The Last Word in the radio earlier today as well, he's admitted he'd do it again because he was on, I think, Radio 1 earlier today, and he said, I knew exactly what I was doing. I got a handful of jersey. I was making sure that Robbie O'Flynn wasn't getting a clean shot away. And I would take one for the team, whether it was spotted or not, I'll happily grab him again. But I thought Lean was very clever as well, where he kind of, even with the shirt pull, he got his body across to block as much as he possibly could from where Robbie O'Flynn's shot was naturally coming from. O'Flynn will eventually get the shot away. It was missed by the officials at the time. We've all seen the picture and the slow-mo afterwards. But, Skell, did you pick it up in real time in the stadium that Robbie O'Flynn's jersey was being grabbed?
No, I did not. I was on the Cusick side, on, let's say, on the 50-yard line, if you like. I couldn't see it. Now, look, with the benefit of replay, it's a piece of cake saying it's a free. It's a tactical free, yeah, but we see that all the time. So every tackle you see nowadays, right, it's on the line, let's say, which is right for me. The tackles need to be on the line. You need to be pushing the boundaries as best you can to turn over possession. And if that happened on the 65, would that have been a free? I don't think it would have been, let's. Do you know what I mean? Because it was so innocuous, wasn't it? Like, it was just in, out fast. And it's kind of, you have the benefit of replay, and then you slow it down, and makes it worse again. And you'll say, yeah, it's a technical foul. Now, if he gave it, I think, it would have been harsh enough, right? But in the context of the whole game, the occasion, etc., the benefit of a replay, yeah, you'll say, grant, give it and throw, and everything's fine. But again, I don't think that's given as a free out in 65. To be honest, Will, I think that's a play on. And you're right about Lean. He did his utmost, right, to pull off Robbie O'Flynn, and it worked, and he did it. And that happens all the time. So I'd say, from that perspective, in terms of decisions, I would rank that one down third or fourth, you know, yeah, in terms of priority, if you ask me. There was two more I thought that were, geez, a bit more obvious. The one, I suppose, where if I draw you into them, the one where I thought it was a chop, to be honest, a swipe by John, and I think it was Fitzgibbon. And then the one thing where Davy Mack pulls down, well, not, when I say pulls down fouls, I think it was O'Flynn as well. Yeah. Those two were a bit higher on my priority list, if you ask me, because they had bigger impacts in the game, because Clare went down and scored after the Conlon, I'd say, foul, right? And then, obviously, they only got a point out of the Robbie O'Flynn situation. So, for me, that should have been a free in to Cork, the first one. The second one, then, should have been, if you ask me, a black card. I know people might agree with me, but I thought myself it was a black card, and it was a pen up. Even in real time, I said, here comes a black card. That's a man down. Then, like, that was a big one. So, what do you reckon, Murph?
Look, to go back to the one that you were on there a minute ago with the last puck of the game, the few things I'd say about that is, first of all, I haven't seen one part of the conversation where Tommy O'Connell, in the 75th minute in normal time, pulled the jersey by Aaron Shanahan. Johnny Murphy sees it and he gives it. He wasn't afraid of going, oh, what will I do here? Will I let it play out? He saw a foul of a pull of a jersey, very similar, and he gave it. And that was Cork to draw the game, bring it to extra time. If Johnny Murphy sees Conor Lean fouling, pulling that jersey, he would have given it. But you look where it is, and Conor Lean pulls it. It's at the side where Johnny Murphy can't see. And Johnny Murphy has nothing else at his disposal. He has looking at the plate. That's it. Another thing I'd look at there as well is, there's seven Cork players in the shot, including Robbie O'Flynn. When the ball goes wide, no Cork player turns to Johnny Murphy. Not one of them. So go back and have a look at it. And for me, that's an indicator. I was with Seamus Flanagan and I was with Neil McManus. None of us said, oh, there was a pull there of a jersey. We didn't see it. Seven of the Cork players that were there, including Robbie O'Flynn, nobody turned to him that I could see. And even in the replay, I look back on it, nobody turned. So for me, I'm going, well, the players didn't turn. In real time, I didn't see it. For me, that's when you have to decide. Because I'd say you could nearly have a freeze frame of a lot of plays during the game yesterday. And if you had a freeze frame of it, you said, there's a free. If you watch the actual play of it, you go, well, that's how could you call that in real time? It's impossible. So for me, with that one, if Johnny Murphy sees it, he calls it. He couldn't see it. And he has no other way of, he has no mechanism to call that free other than if he sees it. And the big one for me then is that the Cork players didn't appeal. They didn't give out. You know, they just kind of knew these are the small margins by which these things happen. For the other ones then, I'd actually disagree with you on the black card one, Skell.
Because Hogan came across, is it?
I just thought because he didn't have possession and the ball was going away from him and I thought it was going to get into Ivor Quilligan's hands. Like,
so just before you go any further, right?
Yeah.
So just picture this now. Rule out a replay. Don't even look at a replay on the screen, right? And think in real time, okay?
Yeah.
Was that a professional foul? That's the question I have to ask. Don't mind, because we've been in for replays, but that's irrelevant. Johnny Murphy and his team, his own part specifically, was that a professional foul? If you don't have the ball, I think it's irrelevant. If it's a professional foul, you mean to take him down, that's a different story.
I think this is how it played out. McInerney knew exactly what he was doing and he knew he was going to try and grab Robbie O'Flynn, and what he did then was turn his body away to make it look like he's fallen, so he makes it hard on Johnny Murphy to identify that as a clean, I'm going to pull you down. Johnny Murphy goes in, consults with the umpires, says, what happened there? And he goes, David McInerney fell and he pulled down Robbie O'Flynn. Did he pull him down? Umpire's thinking, what did I see? Well, McInerney kind of fell over, but did he pull him down? I don't think so. Okay, well, we can't give it free for that. And then as well, you do have the thing of Adam Hogan was coming back. He probably asked the question, was there cover? Well, the ball went into Ivor Quilligan and Adam Hogan was there. He goes, there's three things here now that I have that can't, like when you go back to, let's say, Cork and Limerick in the Gaelic ground, or not in the Gaelic ground, sorry, in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Shane Kingston has the ball in his hand and is running that goal. Mm-hmm. That's different. And he's pulled down by Kyle Hayes. So you're like, okay, there's a few indicators here that's saying it should be a penalty. But I think the three things that Johnny Murphy had to work with here with his umpires, I think he's just going, there's too much here that isn't enough concrete evidence that this was a penalty. And I actually think he got it right. I don't think it was. It was so on the line. It was so marginal. And I go back and I go as far as saying if he did give a penalty, I wouldn't even be hard on him because I'm like, Jesus, that's a hard call to make in real time. But I think he got it right. I respect his disputes.
Just park the penalty for 1 second, right? Because there is another element to this. McInerney could have received a second yellow card, which would have then been a red. And under the new rules, not that he knew at that point that it was going to go to extra time, Clare could have been hurling a man short if a second yellow was produced. Yeah. So, Scal, was there an argument that it's a free, it's a pull down, you give the second yellow card, and that's the correct punishment?
Yeah, that's possible. That's probably not a bad argument either. But I'm constantly trying to put myself in the position of the referee, to be honest, Will. Yeah. And like, if he misses something, right, there's no guesswork on this. You can't guess anything, right? You're depending on the people around you as well to assist you in being your eyes and ears if you miss something, right? And so if as a team and they consult together and they make a decision, then for me it's classed as an informed decision. Go with it, right? That's fair enough. I have no problem with that. I think the pace of the game has increased dramatically in the last number of years, but the level of assistance we offer our officiates hasn't increased with it. So what I mean by that is the ball is moving at a speed that we've never seen before. And it can transfer 120 yards in literally a second, all right? And we're expecting the referee to get up there and, you know, be right on in every single call. So I do have a sympathy, right? And we can be, there's times where we can call out referees for instance, that they don't, that you know, there was someone with James Owens this year, etc. That's right to do. But in this instance, I think we're probably nitpicking on Johnny Murphy a bit, right? Just for the topic of conversation, obviously. But for me, I just think we need to offer some more assistance to the referee. I don't know. We've touched on this numerous times over the last 3 years in this podcast. Is it a second referee? Is it television? Not sure, right? But I do think now it's high time, and it's great for topics, but it's high time we offer them some more assistance.
Yeah.
We have to offer them some more assistance. Like, really, we have to.
And what I would say, another thing to add in with Johnny Murphy as well, was that there was a point, I'd be honest now, I can't even remember. I have it in my head. It was like David Fitzgerald from Clare, which would say to me that it was the second half of the game. And I think a point was put over and the umpire said point. And it was called back.
Okay.
And he went to Hawkeye. And Johnny Murphy ran into the umpire. And I'm guessing that the conversation was, listen, we have Hawkeye, just use it. And he was just kind of saying to the umpires, listen, we do have a bit of assistance here. If you're in doubt, don't be afraid to go to Hawkeye. If it takes a minute, don't be afraid. So, like, I could see there were several examples of where Johnny Murphy actually went and said, listen, like, he needs help from his officials. And he actually went in to kind of maybe, because the umpires are nervous as well. He's going, listen, we have assistance here, use that. And another point I would say that I thought was really good, I think it was Jerm Elric in extra time or out of time. The game is nearly a blur at this stage. Two boys were messing around anyway. Clare lad, Cork lad, hit the ground. Cork lad hits the ground. He runs over. Get up. Come on. Keep going with it. Like,
I love that.
Yeah, exactly. I think if you broke down all, there's no doubt that Johnny Murphy got a few decisions wrong. No doubt about that. But he got more right than he got wrong yesterday. And the bottom line is we're talking about one of the greatest games we've ever seen. You can't have one of the greatest hurling matches you've ever seen with an official going badly. It doesn't work. It doesn't happen. Right. If an official has a bad game, the game turns bad. If an official has a good game, the game stays good. So if you're saying this is the greatest game I've ever seen, it's definitely up there. It's probably in the top five games I've ever seen. You can't have a bad official if that game's in top five. It doesn't work. It doesn't make any sense. So I just think there's so many things here, and I just kind of like in the quarterfinal as well, when Rory O'Connor was sent off, we were not hard on Johnny Murphy. We were fair in saying that the first yellow wasn't yellow 5 seconds in, and also that the player should have been behind the 45, and that was Johnny Murphy's responsibility. So when, you know, I feel that we've been fair and accurate when we've been talking about him. And I just, and another thing I will say as well is that during the game, again, sitting with Seamus Flanagan, a lad who was in the All-Ireland semi-final, sitting with Neil McManus, we said to each other in normal time, probably four times, Johnny Murphy's having an excellent game here. And Neil McManus actually said, that so far the man of the match. After about 40 minutes, he said, so far the man of the match is Johnny Murphy. And to be honest, I'm seeing it on social media where I'm just kind of going, Jesus Christ, like, Brian Gavin had an article in the paper where he said, unfortunately for referees, it's not the 90% you get right, it's the 10% you get wrong. I would say in this instance, it's the 97% he got right, and it's the 3% he got wrong that people are focusing on. And I just think that it's valid that people are out defending Johnny Murphy at the moment. That's the thing, because we'll have enough days where there'll be bad decisions. And I think after a good game, we just have to say, right, you got a few decisions wrong, but you had a really good game.
Absolutely. There was also a question as well, just for when we will get off the decisions there. And in the interest of balance, while the lads were talking there, the pod listeners might necessarily see it, but a lot of the comments have been sticking up are people saying, ref had a good game, let the game flow, don't be given out with the referee, you'd be given out if he gave more frees. But I also saw one which was a little bit further up, and it was asking both of you, here it is, Owen Hurley. Flynn's one I can live with, but why is nobody talking about Hoggies in the first half? He was pulled back cynically and was literally going through on goal. So should that one have been a penalty?
Adam Hogan, I think, could have been booked for that one, was he?
I think he was, and then he was walking
he was
tight rope for the rest of the game.
Soon after, yeah. He's booked for that one.
He was, yeah. Coming from the Cusack side, wasn't it?
Hmm. Yeah, do you know what? I'm going to hold my hands up here. Is it a case that if he's pulled down, or if he stays standing, because Hoggy stayed standing there, is it a case that he has to hit the deck? And I'm going to hold my hands up there and say that one, because, you know, traditionally what I'm looking out for is a lad being dragged down, and I had it in my head that it was a case that if a player's dragged to the ground, like Hoggy didn't go down, his jersey was pulled.
Yeah.
So that's one I'm just throwing out there, that I'm not 100% on the rule for that one.
I'm kind of the same as you, Murph. I didn't know either. I would classify the difference. If it's a technical foul, it's not a penalty, or it's not, because let's say if you grab the ball three times, pick the ball off the ground, whatever, technical foul, right? Professional foul, which what that was, do you have to hit the deck? I actually don't know. Straight up, I don't know. Maybe if Hoggy sold it, maybe it was a penalty. Do you know what I mean? Maybe Johnny Murphy would give it.
But there wasn't a whole lot of fuss at the time, though. There wasn't.
No, like, and around me as well, from the Croc crew at the time, from what I remember, there wasn't fuss either. You're right.
No, there wasn't huge fuss about it.
I see a few people have asked us about our team of the year, and so do we agree with the Sunday game team of the year. I only did a team of the year next week, which gave us a chance to kind of let the match breathe a little bit. And the idea I'm going to give to the lads is that I want them to pick a position. So what we'll do, say, our three that get in, but also how's about we do maybe three contenders for the positions as well, so that we can talk about some of the depth, because it can be a bit coarse when you go, I got to put a guy in who got to the final, but yet someone may have really impressed in the earlier rounds and we don't put them in. So we will definitely do that on next week's free pod. I can promise you that already at this point. So look, there you go. Lots of talk about the refs there. I think they were probably the main decisions. Like, can we park Murph the 65 decision, that's one the umpire should see? Because it's clear that ball is deflected.
That's an umpire one, yeah, again. And the other one I will say in that, because I watched back all these, because I was actually curious to think in time. At the time, that one was one that I was down towards the canal end, and I went, that's 65, surely, like the direction that the ball went. But you know, the other funny thing, when I did look back on it, Alan Connolly and Brian Hayes are the two people off the shoulder for Seamus Harnedy there. And what they do is they turn and give out to Seamus Harnedy that didn't pass the ball. None of them actually say, that's a 65, hang on for a second. So I'm wondering what the point of view was on the pitch. Like, I don't even think Harnedy, maybe he did. Maybe he did raise it with the referee.
He raised it when they put the hand down.
Did he? Okay. Yeah. But yeah, that was the one that they got wrong. But I'd be kind of saying to the umpires there, like, I mean, Jesus, again, that's an umpire one. Like, that's in towards the 21, in towards the penalty area. There's a block, you know. That was a 65. There's no other way about it. And if you want to call it, that's the one they got wrong. That's the one they got wrong. But it was a 65, yeah.
Yeah. Also, just again, for a Cork supporter, Anthony Hackett was in contact earlier on Twitter. Says, I'm a Cork man. I was in the Nally end. Didn't even know that Lean had pulled O'Flynn's jersey till afterwards. The ref can't see everything. I was watching him trying to get the shot away. I thought he let the game flow generally and helped to be the spectacle it was. Clare deserved the win, and I'm still proud of our lads. So that's Anthony, great. Who's a Cork supporter there. Look, again, VAR, no VAR, seems to be kind of 50-50 among the comments there. Martin Furlong is a Wexford fan, again on the same team as the team of the year, which we will dig into in detail next week. No Kilkenny player in the Sunday game team of the year. It was a bit of a slap in the face to the Leinster Championship, in my opinion. I'm saying this as a Wexford fan. I thought, again, let's not totally into for next week, but I thought that Keane Kenny would be in contention, or Donnelly would be in contention. I thought Lee Chin would be very much in contention if we're going to go down the Wexford side of things. Maybe Wexford go out too early from to be considered above some of the Cork and Clare forwards. And I think there's obviously a recency bias when you pick the team of the year on the night of the All-Ireland final, where naturally it's going to be stacked with players from both teams, particularly when it's on that. So let us have a little bit of a reflection about that before we do it next week. Also, Joseph wants us to talk about the changing of the power in hurling, the big three starting to lose finals to the weaker counties. So we've now got to, Kilkenny will officially be 10 years, Murph, next year since you've won one.
Yep.
It's going to be heading on 20 now for Cork since 2005. And Tip haven't won one since 2019. So Cork have contested, basically, I suppose, if we look at it since, do we call the power shift since Limerick have become the power, Joseph? Is that fair enough? Where, obviously, we've had Cork in two finals and Kilkenny in three finals since then, because Kilkenny lost to Tip in 2019 as well. Like, is there a power shift? When Joseph says, guys, can you talk about the power shift in hurling with the big three now losing finals? Is this not a case of Limerick have been the best team for the last 6-7 years, and this year they were beaten by a Cork team, and Clare, who've been incredibly close to this Limerick team, then go and lift the Liam McCarthy? Or, Murph, is there genuinely a massive power shift going on where the big three are actually behind the teams that contested this final in Limerick?
No, like, Limerick being so dominant has, I suppose, skewed the figures in a way. Like, for example, Clare team would have won more Munsters if they weren't competing against this supreme Limerick team. Kilkenny probably would have got one All-Ireland since if they weren't competing against the Limerick team. I think there's just really good competition at the moment, and very, very fine margins between teams winning and losing. Like, Cork were a hair's breadth from getting rid of that 19-year record yesterday. Marginal, you know. Kilkenny were well beaten last year, but the year previous, you know, were within a puck of the ball, really, of potentially having a go at Limerick. So I just think there's fine margins. I put it down more to the competition, really, that there's really good competition out there. It's very healthy for us to have it. We mightn't have a large number of teams, but the difference between, you know, you have your Munster Championship, your Galway, Kilkenny, Wexford coming back into it, Dublin, thereabouts, not competing for All-Irelands, but at least, you know, causing a bit of trouble there for teams. I think it's more to the competition side of it. What the question is really pointing at, I suppose, is the tradition. I think that's more kind of what it's pointed at, that, you know, Kilkenny have X amount of All-Irelands, Cork, Tipperary, you're probably looking at those three. But look, Cork aren't far away. Be interesting to see after this. It's probably something we'll touch in next week, is, you know, Kilkenny and who will stay on, how many of those players will stay on. Cork have a young panel. Tipperary look probably the furthest out of the lot of them to get back. But I suppose it's unfair to look at Clare and Limerick and these teams as well as not being traditional, not to say big teams, but they are, like, you know, they're traditional strongholds of hurling. So to have Clare back on top, I don't view them in any way as being a non-traditional team. They're an immense hurling county. It wouldn't be in my head that there's a shift of power or anything like that. It just happens to be that I feel we're in a really competitive time, a dominant Limerick team, and it's like going into next year now, it's really wide open. You know, it's really, really wide open. So I just think it's a healthy competition we have at the moment.
Do you not think, Skell, that it is lovely, healthy competition, but I got this feeling that Limerick are going to be reawakened again next year? We're chatting to Seamus Flanagan about this on stage on Friday, and he was saying, look, he's just looking forward to getting the break and going back to the club and whatever else. But, you know, 2019, they take a defeat and they come back the next 4 years and they're utterly dominant. This might be just that extra bit of motivation they need. And also just clear something up as well, because this came up a couple of weeks ago after Limerick were beaten. There are a few people in the comments suggesting, I think it was off the back of Delo's pod, that there was a suggestion that Caroline Currid had come back in to be part of it during the league or at the end of the league. Seamus Flanagan told us both off stage and on stage that she did not come back at any point this year. So Caroline Currid wasn't there. But he said it was a coincidence that their semi-final defeat had come round in the year that she left. He said her leaving wasn't the reason they were beaten. But do you not fully expect, Skell, that Limerick are going to come back and be a dominant force again next year? Or do you think these teams are going to be at Limerick's level again?
I expect everyone to improve, to be honest. And we're talking about the state of the game in general, about hurling and how the levels keep on rising. And like, Clare are at the pinnacle now at the moment. And again, everybody else is up to them to go and get it back. And I think when you're looking at it from a Limerick perspective, yes, they lost the 5 in a row, which is, you know, detrimental from their perspective. But they are now I bet you they're hungry again. Do you know what I mean? Because I would have asked that question of you, Murph, previously, like, so when you're winning all around you, how do you maintain the hunger? How do you keep the same level of, you know, of intent, preparation, mindset, everything, right? And but when you lose one, it's like the reset button is started again, it's pressed again, if you know what I'm saying. So I feel like this is where Limerick were after the 2019 semi-final, this is where they're at now again, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
so the reset button could be pressed, and it could be just the medicine that they might need. And like, we're talking about, they were close, like, they were extremely close. They weren't a mile away this year, so they haven't got, you know, unlike my own county, they haven't got an awful lot to fix, like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A few tweaks, they're going to be right back there again. They'll start off, I'd imagine, the bookies' favourites for Munster next year. Or for Ireland, I'd imagine.
Oh, yeah. I think the biggest thing, like, I remember in 2013, went to the Cork Clare final, deja vu, went to the Cork Clare final. And as a player who was still playing at the time, you just felt like someone who'd been locked out of the house or something. It was like pissing rain outside, and you were looking in at everyone having dinner.
Like a bulldog.
Why can't I be inside? Yeah, you're like a bulldog, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember, like, it was just this feeling of, like, great match, you'd watched it. But as a player, I think you'd have a lot of players who went there yesterday, and probably Seamus Flanagan, and, you know, those Limerick lads, I'm sure there was a good few of them there, and you know, maybe Kilkenny lads or whoever, and they were just looking on and going, Jesus, I wish I was there. Good, bad or different, I wish I was there. And that feeling, if we speak specifically for the Limerick players, that'll develop huge hunger, you know. And they mightn't say that publicly, they mightn't say that in interviews, but, you know, when you're still playing and you're looking at an All-Ireland final you're not involved in, sure, like, you can just feel the energy coming from that listen, for I'll have X amount of years playing this game. I want to be out there playing the game. So I do think it will only be a positive for Limerick coming into next year, getting that bit more hunger again.
By the way, a few people are stuck in the comments about Patrick Horgan. So while the lads were talking there, I just had a quick look at his interview with the Irish Examiner from this evening. So he revealed he also had a hamstring injury. He reckons he pulled it about 1 or 2 minutes into the game. So he played the best part of 100 minutes with a hamstring injury. But he was asked by the media at Cork's homecoming in Páirc Uí Chaoimh this evening, will he be back for season number 18? And he said, quote, I hope so. The last time I said I was able to be selected, I got blasted. I don't know why. Like, it's hard for me because the group of players that are there, there's no messing the players we have and how close we all are. It would be really hard for me to have that relationship with them. We go training every night and we know that we can get more out of each other. It's probably the best environment I've ever played in with Cork. This and the time that Jimmy Barry Murphy was there, Jimmy and Pat Ryan are very similar. They create an atmosphere within the players that's hard to explain. That's just how Jimmy and Pat carry themselves naturally. Pat has been unbelievable for us, especially the older fellas on the panel. When a new management comes in, you don't know what's going to happen, but he's so sound and everything is about, if you're playing well you're in. He proved that all year, even with Jack O'Connor coming in as a final in the sub, he was hopping out of his skin for 2 weeks. So very much heavily hinting there, Skell, that Hoggy is going to be back and that he's going to go, he's gone past 700, but he's moving towards 800 championship points now. I'm delighted to see him back, Skell. And the reason I am, Murph and I both heard a story on Friday, which kind of broke my heart when he didn't win a Celtic Cross at the end of it, which is that the Jubilee Cork team were down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh at the tail end of last week. They were having a meal and they looked out the window at dusk time, and who was out hitting frees on the pitch but Patrick Horgan in the dark before the All-Ireland final. That's how much this guy wants it, and he's going to go back for another shot at it next year. So I think as hurling fans, we must all be delighted to see he's coming back for season 18.
Yeah, but I suppose sometimes when you look at these players who've been around a while, some, even people in the media or the public, they're nearly in a rush to retire them. Do you know, why don't we just embrace them, embrace their greatness, embrace their preparation? Like, he's just really devoted to his craft, you know what I mean? And like, yeah, of course he's not as quick as he used to be or whatever. that's obvious. That's what happens at age. But he's still a handful. Like, did he get about 3.11 or 3.12 from play this year? Would that be around that? I don't have the figure to my head, but something like that. Like, he still contributed heavily. And, you know, he was, as the Americans would say, he was clutch in big moments. You know, that free at the end.
The free, yeah. That was brilliant.
I know it looks easy. Don't get me wrong. It looks easy. I fucked that. That's hard. That's hard. When the weight of a county is on your back and the weight of another county is against you. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, that's hard. But it's a measure of the man, in fairness to him. And again, for him to last as long as he did, credit to him. But I'm in no rush to retire that man. I'm in no rush to retire TJ. Do you know what I mean? I'm in no rush to retire. There's people along scattered in different teams that we can speak about that, you know, have given great service through their counties. No rush to retire them. So I hope he's back next year. Keep rocking. Head towards 800.
Yeah, what do you reckon, Murph?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I'm looking at the programme here. I could be wrong, but I had four of the Cork starting forwards down that scored from play. I didn't have anything for Alan Connolly or Declan Dalton, but Hoggy scored from play. And the big thing is as well, we're talking about margins here of winning and losing games. You know, Hoggy from freeze was top class. And that free, I was only going to say that Skell touched on there, the last one that he had to just stand over and poke it over the bar in order to allow another play to happen that they might be able to go on the attack. He just stood over it and stopped it and went straight over the black spot. In Northern Ireland final, and like if he hits that wide, essentially Cork are finished. That's them done because it's a 2-point game at that stage and Clare will grind down the clock. So just there's big moments there to go unseen and he's still producing. And like he looks in incredible shape. He doesn't look like he's being caught, like, you know, he doesn't look like he's stuck for any sort of pace or movement. And so, yeah, I don't see a reason why he wouldn't be back next year.
To Tom Ryan's question, I want to get on to Cork in a second with a couple of interesting questions about the mayor. Lads, we'll be doing a pod if new managers get appointed in the next few weeks. It'll be interesting to see who goes where. So the plan at the moment is to do a pod next week where we kind of wrap up the season. I wouldn't rule out us sitting down to do something if something interesting happens, because generally, and we now have two bloody WhatsApp groups, because we've got one with Podge the Skell's not in, that we probably need to fold into one group. And I've got a group running with some of the other lads that were at the roadshow last week in Dublin as well. So there's at least three different groups gone now.
Do you want to explain, Will, to Skell here now, that was set up for Friday night for, obviously, you know, we're just making arrangements. We didn't just set one up without Skell and with Podge to go.
Like, in my head, as he's talking, I'm just saying, wanker.
Why did you set that up? It's literally, Skell, it's called Board Gosh Friday Night. It was set up on Monday.
Without the other lad.
Well, like, to be fair, we were just going like, we'll call a spade, we were going to miss you, but we also didn't want to be having the conversation, you looking at the group then going, ah, oh, Jesus Christ, like, you know, so, and then we had to go Podge in.
Just as well, I wasn't in it, because at 4 o'clock that morning, I would abuse the headsy.
You abused us anyway. You abused us anyway, and you're doing it on Twitter and off Twitter. if you have a means to contact us, I woke up this morning, woke up this morning, two different means of, I think one was WhatsApp and the other was Twitter direct message, lads with Skell in coppers. Lads meeting Skell, and they send it on to me as if I'm wondering where is Skell now, where is he, I need an update. And so lads are just sending me photos of you.
May I just say that coppers was tremendous crack, and David Blanchfield, big man, he can put it away too.
Yeah, he's a great man.
James Flanagan, gentleman.
Absolutely. Sound for that.
I tell you one thing. I'm not, this is no exaggeration. Aidan Hart and Aidan Helbert were at the match with me yesterday. And I'd say if it was said to me once, it was said to me 500 times, cow shit. Jesus. So the reach of the pod is there, lads. The reach of the pod is there.
I'll tell you one, and I'm going to preempt this by saying, you can press the bleep button now for this, but I was walking down after the game was coming out, myself, Neil and Seamus and Aidan were walking down past Crow Park Hotel, and a few Clare fans stood out. One lad said, "Hey Murphy, you may keep the old swearing down on the pod." And I said, "Ah, fuck off with yourself." and sure, your man let a big laugh out and thought it was brilliant, but Jesus gas. It's funny now, the crack, like, you know, when you actually meet lads. I know we had it at like the Borgosh the other night, or you meet them at road shows, but even at games as well, you know, some lads will introduce you by their handle and they're like, "Oh Jesus, yeah, that's you," or "this is whatever." But then the biggest, you're getting the one with Cowshite. The biggest one I get is, "Hey, where's Skell?" That's what I get. So as if I'm going, "Oh,
he's got a little
mind in work."
You better move in, right? Move in with you. No, you couldn't afford the grocery bill, trust me.
I don't want it. That's an awful.
We definitely had one about Cork here that I wanted to use, and I put it up way earlier on that I totally forgot. Here it is. Trevor Hennessy, because I will ask about Podge the Calf before we finish off as well. But Trevor Hennessy, did any of the Cork outfield players win their individual battle? Now, that brings down nicely as well, Murph. Carl Malone, you talked about him last week. He's probably going to have to chase around with Dara Fitzgibbon. I thought Malone did an excellent job. That kind of untold, unseen work where you're getting around, you're hassling, you're being awkward to play against, kind of curtailing Fitzgibbon's influence in the game. But did Clare win all the individual battles out the pitch, or is there any you think of that Cork were actually on top?
I think there's quite a few broke even. Like, I'm looking at the programme here now, and there's some games you come away from and you're kind of saying, look, obviously because one team won, you're saying we'll lose one somewhere. But, like, if you look at, like, Owen Downey won his position. Owen Downey was really good, but he marked a variety of lads inside and full forward. Like, you know, he was on Shane O'Donnell at one stage, he was on Peter Duggan. It changed quite a bit. If you look at David Fitzgerald, he got 4 points from play. Tim O'Malley got 3. You know, like, it's kind of, it's a tough enough one there. And I'm looking at the matchups as well. Seamus Harnedy got 4 points. Dermot Ryan got 3. I'm fairly sure they were marking each other for the most part, weren't they? Like, there's a lot of ones there where Clare just about marginally won it. But there's a lot of positions that broke even. Yeah, it's a good question when you're trying to dig into it. Like, Conor Cleary got the better. Alan Connolly didn't score from play. I don't have him down for a score.
You got the one after you went off, didn't he? Or am I wrong there?
I'm calling my hand up, could be wrong. I have him down for a yellow card. I don't have him down for a score.
He got 1 point from play.
Okay,
the hillside.
Yeah. You know, that could be viewed, though. That could be viewed, though, as a fullback win. Like, 1 point, that's acceptable, you know. If you're looking then as well, depends on who's marking Declan Dalton. Was it McInerney?
Yes.
It was McInerney. Yeah. McInerney probably won that position. Declan Dalton came off after 45 minutes.
McInerney won that.
McInerney won that one, you know.
Only one comes to my mind, lads. I thought Rob Downey was really good. But then again, if you look at, like, I know Rogers had 11 in his back. He finished with 1-3. You know, yeah. But Rob Downey, I thought, was really good. He didn't win his position. I think they neutralised each other, if you like. To a degree. I know. Yeah. Look, Rogers came out 1-3, but Rob Downey came out with a heap of ball. Yeah. What did he get? A goal himself? 1-1?
Who's that? Rogers?
Rob Downey?
Oh, Rob Downey.
He got a goal. Backline got 1-4, didn't they? Cork backline.
Well, correct, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the Clare backline got Conor McInerney didn't score. 3 points.
Dermot Ryan got 3, yeah.
Yeah. Skye, can I ask you about David Fitzgerald? Because obviously, look, Fitzgerald was up against Coleman, so Coleman gets 3 points going the other way.
Yeah, the other one.
I put the head in my hands going, not again. Oh, but David
No. I'm not trying to awake the dragon, as you put it on stage on Friday night. The David Fitzgerald of the Clare wing forward type.
Yeah.
One of those very strange performances, right? So he gets the assist for Kelly's goal. Now, maybe it's very generous to call it an assist, given everything Tony did after he got the ball.
Yeah.
He probably left about 1-7 or 1-8 behind him. Missed a gilt-edge chance for the goal. And yet he was on a world of ball. I don't know how you assess his performance.
Well, he'd over 20 possessions in my count, anyway. And he had, I think he had 14 attempts at goal. If not 15. Again, people will count this differently, like you said, but I think he had 14 attempts on goal. But to be honest, right, I'm not trying to be critical now, but he had the freedom in the park, though, Will. I could understand specifically when I was watching Fitzgerald at wing forward in the second half, Mark Coleman was giving him 10 yards every time. Every time, do you know what I mean? And I was thinking, why isn't he pushing up on him? Because the amount of, I suppose, damage Fitzgerald was doing, not on the scoring front, but even possession-wise, was huge. And I'm saying, it's not going to get any worse, like, if you push up on Fitzgerald. And probably the one criticism about Patrick Collins was, when Coleman was showing for the ball, Fitzgerald would drop off 15, 20 metres. You know what I mean? And if that happens in right, I have to go to the far side. You know, because if I hit the ball that side and Clare win it, who's the first man they're going to give it to? It's Fitzgerald. That happened on a few occasions, like, you know. But I was saying at this stage, just shove up. And then in the last 5 or 7 minutes of normal time, it just maybe the way it handled, Mark Coleman seemed to go into midfield, you know, for a period, let's say, and then he thundered into the game for at midfield, right, for a period. Tim and Batty were back to wing back. So I'd say, like, he could have finished at 1-10 or 1-11, but still did enough. Like, he's the medalist back. Who gives a shit? You know what I mean? And I think he.
You know what? Why are we analysing this game at all?
I think he finished.
Wasn't it free? Or, he has a medalist back. Who gives a shit?
What did he do? I think he's top scorer for play this year.
David Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
Before the game, I think David Fitzgerald before the game had 24 points. He had two 218 from play. I think Tony, and I think before the game, Shane O'Donnell had 2:12 or 2:13 or so for play. But yeah, like, I mean, that was the thing. I think I texted that into the group yesterday morning. I was like, Darragh Fitzgibbon.
Yeah, you said Fitzgibbon had 22 points.
22.
Yesterday, so that's 24. I had Fitzgerald on for 2:17 for yesterday. Okay. He got 4. So then that was 2:21 he's finished, I think. I think. Still, fair scoring. That's some play.
It was huge scoring. But like, if that was a full forward or that was a wing forward, like I said it yesterday, we view midfielders scoring completely different, because probably look at David Fitzgerald's points. A lot of them are from out between the 65 and the 45. Maybe we associate the threat with, you know, it kind of heightens what we think of a player scoring. But like, that's enormous scores over the course of a season to be racking up for a midfielder. And it just shows you how the shift has happened. Like, generally over the years, about 15 years ago, a midfielder comes away from the game at 2 points. That's a good return. It's great. You know, Fitzgerald is constantly kind of pushing towards, there's some games there in Robbins he could come away at 1-4, 1-5. You know, if the going is right, he'll get through. But it's just between himself and Fitzgibbon, full credit to how they have been consistently involved for their teams throughout the year and on the scoring front.
Yeah,
no, agreed. And I would agree with Owen Hurley here as well about the fact that Mark Coleman was very good. And you can have a circumstance where you have two guys who are marking each other and both can play well. I remember us talking about it a few times during the year.
I respectfully disagree. I thought he was really good in the last 10 minutes of the game and extra time. But before that, I thought he gave Fisher way too much space.
Yeah.
Again, it's an opinion. It's just a view.
Yeah. A couple more before we finish off. Why is Conor Lehan not getting more game time? It's come up a few times, sir.
Yeah, that was very interesting. And I even, look, again, far be it from me, I think a lot of people are maybe wondering, like Shane Kingston, that, you know, I would have thought it was made for him maybe to come in. Like, no disrespect to Ethan Toomey, I think was the first sub that came in. But like, you were just kind of going, like, the elephant in the room with Shane Kingston sitting on the bench when you want to introduce someone, like Clare introduced Ryan Taylor, and you're going, yeah, that's the trump card there for them.
Yeah.
And you're just going, I was thinking, Jesus, Kingston is the man. And I was there as well looking, going, fairness to Lehan, like, he's shown great energy this year. He's been involved a lot. You don't know what's going on in training. That's the other thing you'll say. But I would have thought it definitely would have been a roll of the dice, like, or worth a roll of the dice to get Lehan onto the field. He's usually worth a score, and he usually picks up the pace of the Cork forwards when he comes on. So, yeah, I was questioning that myself, why he maybe didn't get more time.
Did he want to play? Was he involved? I didn't see that.
I think so.
So he wasn't injured, right?
Okay, and sir, was he injured? I wasn't looking.
I don't know. Yeah. He was talking to him warming up, was he?
Yeah, I think so. I didn't hear he was injured. I mean, the talk after the game was that, just again, he's not really been getting game time throughout, which again seems surprising when, God, we stood there, was it Limerick, Cork, about 18 months ago, we were talking about, you know, how good he was looking at that point. And then it seems this year he's kind of just been off it. Compliments for Skell there as well. Great crack. Skell is right. You may as well, you know, then Skell's a plastic bag. So it's you'll always get a variety there.
Hard to know what to make of that one.
Everyone wants an update on Podge the calf just before we finish, Gail. How is Podge?
Podge the calf?
Yeah.
Line it. 100%. It's like people wanted me to fucking bring him to the match yesterday. That's the only people asking about him. Like, yeah. Imagine me walking down Jones Road to fucking calf. All day. Jeez. Fair funny. It's often embarrassing. I was we were to be at the hotel at 1 o'clock, the Co Park Hotel, and we said we definitely wouldn't get parking because the roads would be closed. So we spun around the side streets of Dublin for a while and got sick of it. So we said, right, we're on a chance in a bit. And this guard, he was on a bike. So we got a guard escort into the hotel through the crowd. And it's bicycle, like, it's fair funny.
No way.
Telling people to move, like, fair embarrassing, don't get me wrong. Fucking place packed, and we're pulling up here in the hit, trying to keep down. But measure the calf in the back. Part of the calf is flying it. My best calf I have, genuinely.
God, right. Well named, good calf. Mark Gearan as well, wondering what the viewing figures are in the UK. I haven't seen them. By all means, I'll stick them in the comments when we do. 1.2 million RT was crazy. So yeah. RT have had a bumper summer. There was a few games of the Euros where they went 1 million plus if you include the player. And the Cork Limerick game wasn't too far off 1 million. I don't have the exact number off the top of my hand, but I think it was like 970,000 odd between the two. So it's been a bumper year for hurling. Like, that's the thing, Murph. What a fantastic finish out to the year. Like, we weren't quite sure after the quarterfinals how it was going to go. First semi-final was okay. Second semi-final was amazing. And the final was amazing. We have happy memories coming out of this year, don't we?
Oh, completely. And that nearly shapes the narrative for the winter now, in terms of when the conversations come back around, like what's the mood music in the winter? Do you know, and we often we revisit what do we need to do for next year. If the final fell flat, the conversation would be nearly starting now over what do we have to do? You know, is the scoring too high? Is this, is that, whatever, like, you know. But like, people are coming away from yesterday going, Jesus, isn't absolutely brilliant. And there was what was, it's not throwing shade around it, but there was a lot of football people there yesterday. There's a lot of people who support soccer. Like, I mean, that's what the All-Ireland final does. There's a lot of people who come to it that if they can get in and see it. And there's a lot of people come away from going, yeah, you have something really right here. You have something really, really good. It was an immense atmosphere from the crack of dawn yesterday till 12 o'clock last night inside in town. It was absolutely top class.
12?
Ireland AM this morning, pal. You were 4 in the morning. I was looking at the watch and I said...
You were going out of the hotel and I was going in.
Yeah. I tell you, when I was leaving, I was like, I do not want to be leaving here. The crack was mighty and lads were heading towards the Boar's Head. And I was like, I've made a commitment. I'm gone. I have to go. And if I don't go now... And then I got texts from a few lads then who were kind of around... few different people that were around Dublin, let's say football lads or whatever, and they're like, you know, whatever, and were you around afterwards or whatever, and I was like, there's more lads texting. And then I woke up from abuse from you and pictures of you with David Blanchfield, and Seamus Flanagan sent me a picture with you, and I was like, oh god. Now, but then this morning, the other thing we'll say, when I woke up, I was like, yeah, I'm happy enough to be me now, to be honest. you're probably absolutely dying.
I won't lie, Murph, right? I won't lie, I was coming down the road from Dublin, and myself and Hart, it was a toss of a coin, we'll go again.
Oh jeez.
We had toyed it from the Crow Park Hotel all the way to Athlone, right? Mm. And then I said, no, that's it. So we rang one of the lads who was behind us. I said, pull over inside the motorway, Hart, get out. Because if you stay in this Jeep, we'll have a pint of Guinness in 20 minutes.
The other thing I will say randomly now, just to throw it in at the end, because I see there's a few comments there, people were just asking about the BBC, what was their viewership and different things. I don't know exactly what the viewership was, but it was the second highest trending thing in Britain yesterday, across Scotland and Wales and England, which is great for the game. Like, we often have had conversations on this pod during the year about growing the game. The aim of the BBC yesterday was to bring it to a bigger audience that may have not seen the game, and genuinely, I know as part of it, but they really achieved that. I think if you went onto Twitter there yesterday evening, even today, there's a lot of messages of people who just flicked it on, people who did not know what they were looking at. They flicked it on and they were like, this is absolutely brilliant. And like, in fairness, what an example to show them. You couldn't have picked a better game. Like, I mean, when people were tuning in, the referee was getting a clip and you're kind of going, what is this sport like, you know? But from BBC point of view, look, Jesus, full credit to BBC Northern Ireland, because it was the team there that were driving it. But like, they, for the first time ever, they projected this off to Scotland, England and Wales, and it got a huge reaction. So just from my own point of view, say well done to anybody who's involved there. I had an easy job, Skehel and Will, as you know, of just talking about the game, but like, getting this to achieve it is something different, you know?
Yeah, I'd agree with Damien Madden here as well. It's Baffin Jubilee, team are not shown. So I think they were, from what I saw, it was kind of shown but talked over a little bit while it was happening. They still haven't found the sweet spot for that. I know Landers was saying up for the match. We watched up for the match because National Pods were on it. And we were seeing, would it be a slightly different experience than us on Friday night? And by God, it was a very different experience on Saturday watching the two boys. Had to hang around for about an hour and 40 minutes to see them as well. But anyway... I watched far more Irish dancing than I had planned to on Saturday to see the two lads. But Landers making that point about the Jubilee team. I think halfway is the only place to have it, and I think they should definitely take some time there as well. Who pays better, Ireland AM or the BBC? Of course the BBC pay Murph an awful lot better than Ireland AM do. And hold on.
That's why you want to replay so bad.
Absolutely. It was like, ching ching, holiday number 15 if this happens.
There was some very William, you alluded to you're going on holidays now in a few weeks, so
I tell you, I was getting worried about it, because I was like, I can park the pod for a little while and go. Yeah. And then I thought, bloody hell, if this goes 2 weeks later, we'll have to do a review pod and a preview pod ahead of the replay. And this is going to mess my plans up entirely. But some people are also making the suggestion that, and there has to be a company out there. Surely a farmer in Clare buys Podge the calf, potentially, even if it is his best calf, coming in from Sports Fan. And someone else had asked as well, there should be a live pod before Podge the calf gets too big. That's coming from Joseph there. And the idea is from Dara here, surely get Skehel and Podge live at the ploughing. So there must be some company.
Can I just suggest something here now, actually?
Go on.
Since Podge has been born, Clare haven't lost in All Ireland, right? So there's been a calf christened Podge Collins. Clare have now won the All-Ireland. If Clare don't go up to Capitagal, seize that calf and do like a puck fair job where that calf is up on a pedestal in Ennis for the week, I think they're missing out.
Oh, Jesus, great, yeah.
If you don't put Podge or the real Podge Collins up on a pedestal for the week, I think they're just missing out.
I bet they raise the price.
There you go. All right, so they were on the GA YouTube. Podge was on that as well. Bloody Podge Collins was everywhere at the weekend. He was on GA Go's coverage.
He was on the 45 at one stage as well with Off the Ball and Ashing O'Reilly. So he was literally anywhere you turned at the weekend, Podge Collins.
There you go. He gave me a lift home on Friday, so I can't complain. Seamus Flanagan, by the way, to his massive credit, before we go. So we were leaving. We were getting to the point where the Boar's Head was about to close on Friday after the roadshow. We'd all had a nice time. We went for a couple of drinks. Everyone's happy out. We bump into a table of listeners of the pod. Flanagan went out for a few beers with them after we went home.
Yeah. I think the boys were more surprised than anybody, yeah. But he was great though. He was brilliant.
He's awful sound.
Yeah, no, great.
I'm sorry, not that I didn't expect it, like, but I'm just saying he's awful sound, like.
And I might say as well, his wife, who's listening to the pod, awful sound as well. Wicked nice woman. Wicked nice. So there was a great group down there.
His wife.
Yeah, she's listening.
Sorry,
to the pod.
I said my wife who listens to the pod awful sound. Sorry.
But she is. That's true also.
Yeah, but that would have been random to say it. Yeah.
No, yeah. But and also, Will, we have to add it as well there. We got a mark for the coleslaw as well on the chicken fillet roll from those boys from West Cork, from Clonakilty. They said the coleslaw. Yep. There we go. So Skehill and Gavin Riley. There you are. Take it out.
By the way, Flanagan says the Inver is even better in Limerick. So if we go back to Limerick for a live pod next year, we'll go to Inver for our chicken fillet roll.
There was a lad fairly adamant in the crowd also, Inver. He didn't get passionate about anything else, but when it was the chicken fillet roll, he said Inver in Limerick.
Yeah. There was someone else who was asking far further up. I can't find the comment now. Did you tell Skell about the guy who asked us the long-winded question? Well, Skell can go to the YouTube like everyone else and have a look at the Q&A from Friday night, because it's not even that dated, really. I think he's still asking the question at this stage here on Monday. So
we met him outside the Crow Park Hotel yesterday, by all accounts. Seamus Flanagan met him. He came over to Seamus Flanagan.
Did he get his question off?
He was still going. He was still asking it. His question was the longest question. It wasn't even a question. It was a statement, really, for quite a bit. And all of our hurting personation.
Like you with the proclamation again, was it?
That was it.
Trust me, Murph's proclamation was a lot shorter, Skell. And the other problem was that in the corner of my eye, which people won't have seen in the seats, were the security and the BGE, who we had promised we'd finish at 10 o'clock dead on the money. And I knew we still had to give the All-Ireland tickets away and that we had a nice story because it was a 12-year-old kid and her mother who were getting the tickets to go to the final. So I needed to get to that. We needed to get a mic over to her. And I'm like, this is going to be surely one quick fire question. I go around to the lads and they just pick who they're going to win. And next thing, this guy asks a question that's 8.5 minutes long, which is not helpful.
Eight and a half minutes.
At least. And then we got past that. And then after we got past that, of course, Tommy Walsh, being the bold whore that he is, decided, no, we can't leave it that the guys are split across the panel. We need to get Podge and Nash to get up and do rock, paper, scissors, which is also a game of rock, paper, scissors I thought was never going to end. It was at least four or five rounds, Murph, before they actually had a winner.
Yeah.
Nash won in the end.
Nash won with the scissors, I think, in the end.
Yeah.
Because.
Big call indeed. Skell and Davy Fitch should manage Galway together. Affectionate Astro Station. Yeah, we are not. Was there a question? I don't think there was. Like, I joked about whether
there was. I don't think there was a question.
Now, just give me a brief synopsis of what the question.
It started off. So Paddy Grace would have been Tommy's grandfather, I think it was.
Yeah.
And he started going off. Tommy, I thought it was going to go down that line of what you know affected Paddy Grace having your career, what inspiration. And he started talking about Paddy Grace, and then he just kind of drifted, and it then mashed into a Micheál Amara Hurtig impersonation. And we were kind of going, okay, this is going to be a question now. And then he went back, and he was going to ask the question about Paddy Grace, and then drifted back into a Micheál Amara Hurtig impersonation, and didn't really. So we kind of looked at each other and said, what's going to happen here? And eventually, I think they turned off the microphone. I'm not sure even what happened.
No, I had to kick in because I was actually getting a message into my ear at that point, which was, we're going to go over 10 o'clock if you don't step in. I was trying to be as nice as I could for as long as possible.
Yeah.
And then it was just a case of, like, there's no question here. We have to get to the kid getting the tickets. Like, if we don't do that, we're not getting off stage. So there you go. We became the three fucking nobodies. You're right, Tom O'Hall, this year.
Yeah.
Well done, boys.
We've lived up to it.
We have. Thanks a million for everyone for joining us. Hopefully that's been good fun. We will be back with a members pod tomorrow. That'll finish it this week. If you want to watch the two road shows from last weekend. They don't actually date that much because the chat with Seamus Flanagan is almost primarily about Limerick. The story with Tommy Walsh is really Murph telling stories about his teammates and who robbed gear from the RFU, not to give away too many spoilers. And the second half, we end up chatting to Nash and Podge, and we're just kind of, you know, shooting the breeze for the best part. So you can definitely go back and have a look at that one. What was the question Scobie asked? I have no idea, and I don't think your man did either. So that's where we're at. All right, thanks a million for everyone. Will, no answer to my question. Shane Power, what is your question? Will we do a pod? I'm ready to go next. Sorry, no. This is live podcasting for you. Do you want to stick in that question again, Shane Power, wherever you had it? Oh, what do you think of Cork Board charging €4 for a homecoming before you go? Absolutely shambolic insulting the Cork people who follow up in the country. Right.
Surely.
Did it, yeah. So
they charged €4 to people going to homecoming.
They did. Now, I suppose here's the thing, right? There were, I think, three different bands that were there. I'm sure someone else will find out if I was wrong. And I know that Limerick charged a €2 fee last year. And the reason they charged a €2 fee, I think, was to cap the numbers. Now, obviously, they weren't going to fill out Porky Quay fully tonight with the £4. And I can see why supporters would feel that it's silly to be charged €4 to go along to it. I often think a homecoming for a losing team sucks. I don't know if either of you had homecomings after defeats. The last thing you want to do, was it?
They're terrible.
That's tough, yeah. It's tough. Yeah, there's nothing to say. Like, you appreciate the people coming out. Yeah, absolutely, of course you do. It's more than appreciated, but you just feel it's a tough experience for the player. That's
there's nothing
just
to celebrate. That's the trouble.
Nothing, no.
There's cheering around there, but you've come back with nothing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. That's essentially it. Like, so you failed at your job, really. So you come back with nothing. So nothing to celebrate.
Yeah,
and it's great. As you said yourself, Murph, like it's grand to have the appreciation from the people, which is again really appreciated from the players' perspective. Jeez, it's awful experience coming back.
Yeah, no, it doesn't look good. In fairness, and I know there's a few people joking there saying you have to pay for Porky Grieve. I'm sure it was probably paying for the acts that were there in the night and security and insurance and all that type of stuff. But still, it feels kind of silly. What was the question? Would make a great OTB T-shirt. Agreed. I'll see if those further up the food chain can get that made. They've got more pressing concerns at the moment, in fairness. Okie dokie, and right, here's the last question. I promise we're gone on this. Who's winning the football this week, lads?
Let's call our resident footballer here anyway. You go first.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go Galway. And you know why? I'll go for the reasons of... Yeah, Galway have grounded out a lot of results. Sean Kelly wasn't playing in the semi-final. Jamie Comer hasn't been right. They've been carrying a few injuries, and they've been finding results kind of similar to Clare that way. You know that you're kind of pointing to them, saying they're just finding a way. And that result against Dublin was absolutely unbelievable. So I'll just go with Galway.
Okay, I'm also going for Galway. I'd be very surprised if Skell doesn't go for them here. I think Galway have been showing a resilience throughout the year. Generally, the team who takes out the champ, it doesn't necessarily follow that they become champions. We saw that just in the weekend gone by, but they've had injuries all over the place, and yet they're still eking out results along the way. I thought they were impressive in how they put away Donegal in the semi-final. And I just fancy them. I don't know if they have enough. Like, it was very close when these two teams met, but Galway should have held on in Markovitch Park and won that game. So, Skell, are you confident it's going to be, you know, some respite for the year with Sam Maguire coming, even if it's not Liam coming around this time?
Respite.
Because yeah, I know for you, the Liam McCarthy means a lot more than Sam, but you'd still like to see it.
Yeah, but as a tribesman, it's like, again, you want to come over this side of the country. So I'm with you two boys in the sense that I'm confident as well. And I'm hopeful that we see this play from someone like Shane Walsh to equal what Tony Kelly did yesterday. Because it's in him. It's in him. And the last final he played in against Kerry, like, he was awesome. Himself and Clifford gave a show. So I'm hopeful, wishful, fingers crossed, he does it again.
Talking about football, it's no wonder Paddy Andrews had the middle finger up when you took a picture with him last night, Scal.
I told him the football pod wouldn't lace our boots.
There you go. I reckon he thinks that you're trying to muscle into his territory at the moment. So there you go, lads. It's been a pleasure. It's not the last one of the year. We will turn around and lots of Galway boo after we saw people going for our matches a few minutes ago as well. So stay tuned for the football pod. That's out tomorrow, for the guys to look forward to that final as well. Thanks everyone for joining us on the live stream. Again, massive numbers we can see in the background again, which is fantastic. If you could give us a like, maybe even leave a comment outside the live, it helps a lot. It helps to stir up debate. I'm sure there's going to be lots in there saying Davy Fitzgerald is going to Galway, etc, etc. Skell will read all of them, I promise, and we'll come back with them next week. Thanks a million for being with us on the live. Paul Murphy, thanking you.
Thanks very much, lads.
James Skell, we'll talk to you soon.
Sure does. See
you. OTB's The Hurling Pod
with Bord Gáis Energy, proud sponsors of the Senior Hurling Championship.